one of the things that we've seen is that various states have decided to create their own online registration system that is further exacerbating the problem. That previously the problem was that we had the various paper processes, and now we have various online processes. And so New York is an example that's coming in with their own registration process, where they want everything digital so that they can do data mining for all the online applications and all the online filings, which I think is getting us further away from the goal that NASCO envisioned, and I think the sector envisioned, which is an easy way to facilitate a nationwide registration system. If NASCO really wanted this to be successful, I think the fact that despite the pilot program in 2014, we're in 2022 and there are only two states on the state charity registration website. So we're a long way from where I think we as a sector wanted to be.
I think many clients were hoping that they would have sort of this simple ease of registration where you could go to one website and immediately register and check the box on all the states that you were going to intend to solicit in, and have it all be streamlined and quick and easy and also relatively inexpensive, right? I mean, there is a cost associated with filing in every single one of the different jurisdictions, having to have somebody assist you in those registrations, et cetera. But right now, it's still a process where it's state by state, unless it's Connecticut and Georgia, in which case you can use NASCO's online portal.
And I think this is just furthering the difficulty that started years ago when they created the uniform registration document, that each state then had its own separate addendum. And so this is not a new effort. This is just an effort that continues to drag. And I think part of the problem is the difficulty that many of these registration regimes are state law based would require a change in state law, and the difficulty overall in coordinating 50 different states in terms of registration has continued to be a process that has been difficult. And I think the burden ultimately falls on the charities that are doing the right thing in registering and not on the charities that are not compliant.
Completely agree. I mean, I also think that, you know, to the extent that there are some states that are much more aggressive and interested in oversight of the organizations who are, you know, soliciting in their jurisdiction, those entities probably want to keep their own portals where they are getting the information that they want, the ability to mine that data and use that data in the way they think makes sense, as opposed to turning it over to another entity to collect.
Yeah, so we got a question. Would the new California law cover a facility like PayPal, which is often used to forward payments to charities? And I think the definition of charitable fundraising platform talks about a platform that performs, permits, or otherwise enables acts of solicitation to occur. So I think the distinction would be that if it's truly just a payment portal, as opposed to a platform where solicitation occurs, might be the distinction. So if it's truly just a payment processor, it may not have to comply with the new law, as opposed to a platform that's more than just simply the ability to incur a transaction from a credit card. I don't know if Megan, you have a different view on that.
No, I think that's very true. And you'll see in a couple of minutes, we'll talk about the PayPal Charitable Giving Fund and a settlement there between 22 different states and the District of Columbia with that fund on some of how they are disclosing and soliciting to donors and their actions. So I think state regulators are looking at sort of those PayPals and those processing things, but they don't necessarily get pulled into this definition here.
Well, that's a good segue to the next section on state enforcement rules.
Absolutely. So each year, NASCO comes together and compiles and releases an annual report on state regulation and enforcement. And the most recently available version of that is their 2020 annual report, which covers their enforcement actions at the state level from January 2019 through March 2020. We don't have an updated report yet for actions after March 2020, which I think is somewhat understandable given where we are with the pandemic and sort of the ability to put together something as comprehensive as these reports are. The report's really thorough. It looks at enforcement in several different areas from a state standpoint. So deceptive solicitation, governance and breach of fiduciary duties, trust and estate issues, healthcare, and then other issues such as registration. And we've gone ahead, Jonathan and I have pulled out some examples of just a couple of state enforcement actions that were highlighted in that report. Of course, the report contains many more examples than just these. We do recommend that anybody interested go ahead and take a look at the report online from the NASCO website. I think it is a really good view to see that states are active and do enforce regularly in this area. They are looking for entities that are engaged in deceptive practices, that are misappropriating donor funds, or that are taking advantage of donors. One common theme that you may see as we discuss these is the types of charitable entities that seem prone to these kinds of abuses. Many of them talk about benefiting. I think, you know, individuals that tug at all of our heartstrings, right? Veterans, children, people with cancer, that sort of thing, and the sort of emotional connection to wanting to help those people, I think is something that individuals starting up some of these charities that the states have gone after have really, they've really paid attention to, that they've seen that that's an area that people are maybe more willing to give to and therefore can be subject to abuse.